So clearly I didn't record or send out an episode of A Christmas Carol yesterday. Pleased to report that I wasn't hungover after a single margarita, but I am displeased to report that I did have a chronic health thing flare up on Friday night. It can be really heartbreaking to have to leave events early, especially when you're having just a blast. And it's disappointing and it sucks. And I had to spend yesterday in hardcore self-care mode to try to get myself out of the flare. I think I'm making good progress though. Good enough progress that I can sit down and record today. We're 51% of the way there. I just got to power through. So if you're powering through with me, thank you for being here. Let's get back to that ridiculous scene that Dickens is talking about. Fruiterer. That Spanish onion thing is going to haunt me for the rest of my life. Okay, back to the streets of London on Christmas morning. But soon the steeples called good people all to church and chapel, and away they came, flocking through the streets in their best clothes and with their gayest faces. And at the same time, there emerged from scores of by streets, lanes, and nameless turnings innumerable people carrying their dinners to the baker's shops. The sight of these poor revelers appeared to interest the spirit very much, for he stood with Scrooge beside him in a baker's doorway, and taking off the covers as their bearers passed, sprinkled incense on their dinners from his torch. And it was a very uncommon kind of torch, for once or twice when there were angry words between some dinner carriers who had jostled each other, he shed a few drops of water on them from it, and their good humor was restored directly. For they said, it was a shame to quarrel upon Christmas Day, and so it was. God love it, so it was. In time the bells ceased, and the bakers were shut up, and yet there was a genial shadowing forth of all these dinners and the progress of their cooking in the thawed blotch of wet above each baker's oven, where the pavement smoked as if its stones were cooking too. "Is there a peculiar flavor in what you sprinkle from your torch?" asked Scrooge. "There is, my own." "Would it apply to any kind of dinner on this day?" asked Scrooge. "To any kindly given, to a poor one most." "Why to a poor one most?" asked Scrooge. "Because it needs it most." "Spirit," said Scrooge, after a moment's thought, "I wonder you, of all the beings in many worlds about us, should desire to cramp these people's opportunities of innocent enjoyment." "Aye," cried the spirit, "you would deprive them of their means of dining every seventh day, often the only day on which they can be said to dine at all," said Scrooge. "Wouldn't you?" "Aye," cried the spirit. "You seek to close these places on the seventh day," said Scrooge, "and it comes to the same thing." "I seek," exclaimed the spirit. "Forgive me if I am wrong. It has been done in your name, or at least that of your family," said Scrooge. "There are some upon this earth of yours," returned the spirit, "who lay claim to know us, and who do their deeds of passion, pride, ill will, hatred, envy, bigotry, and selfishness in our name, who are as strange to us and all our kith and kin as if they have never lived. Remember that, and charge their doings on themselves, not us." Scrooge promised that he would, and they went on, invisible, as they had been before, into the suburbs of the town. It was a remarkable quality of the ghost, which Scrooge had observed at the baker's, that notwithstanding his gigantic size, he could accommodate himself to any place with ease, and that he stood beneath a low roof quite as gracefully and like a supernatural creature, as it was possible he could have done in any lofty hall. And perhaps it was the pleasure the good spirit had in showing off this power of his, or else it was his own kind, generous, hearty nature, and his sympathy with all poor men, that led him straight to Scrooge's clerks, For there he went and took Scrooge with him, holding on to his robe. And on the threshold of the door the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinkling of his torch. Think of that. Bob had but 15 bob a week himself. He pocketed on Saturdays but 15 copies of his Christian name, and yet the ghost of Christmas present blessed his four-roomed house. Then uprose Mrs. Cratchit, Cratchit's wife, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, which are cheap and make a goodly show for a sixpence. And she laid the cloth, assisted by Belinda Cratchit, second of her daughters, also brave in ribbons, while Master Peter Cratchit plunged a fork into the saucepan of potatoes, and getting the corners of his monstrous shirt collar, Bob's private property, conferred upon his son and heir in honor of the day, into his mouth, rejoiced to find himself so gallantly attired, and yearned to show his linen in the fashionable parks. And now two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose and known for their own, and basking in luxurious thoughts of sage and onion, these young Cratchits danced about the table and exalted Master Peter Cratchit to the skies, while he, not proud, although his collars nearly choked him, blew the fire until the slow potatoes bubbling up knocked loudly in the saucepan lid to be let out and peeled. "What has ever got your precious father, then?" said Mrs. Cratchit. "And your brother Tiny Tim! And Martha warn't as late last Christmas Day by half an hour?" "Here's Martha, mother!" said a girl, appearing as she spoke. "Here's Martha, mother!" cried the two young Cratchits. "Hurrah! There's such a goose, Martha!" "Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are," said Mrs. Cratchit, kissing her a dozen times and taking off her shawl and bonnet for her with officious zeal. "We'd done a great deal of work to finish up last night," replied the girl, "and had to clear away this morning, mother." "Well, never mind, so long as you are come," said Mrs. Cratchit. "Sit ye down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm. Lord bless ye."
"No, no, there's father coming," cried the two young Cratchits,
who were everywhere at once.
"Hide, Martha, hide."
So Martha hid herself, and in came little Bob, the father, with at least 3 feet of comforter exclusive of fringe, hanging down before him, and his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas, for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
"Why, where's our Martha?" cried Bob Cratchit, looking around.
"Not coming," said Mrs. Cratchit.
"Not coming,"
said Bob with a sudden declension in his high spirits. For he had been Tim's blood horse all the way home from church, and it had come home rampant.
"Not coming upon Christmas Day!"
Martha didn't like to see him disappointed, if it were only in joke, so she came out prematurely from behind the closet door and ran into his arms, while the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim and bore him off into the wash house, that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper.
"And how did little Tim behave?" asked Mrs. Cratchit when she had rallied Bob on his credulity and Bob had hugged his daughter to his heart's content.
"As good as gold," said Bob, "and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much and thinks the strangest things you've ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see." Bob's voice was tremulous when he told them this, and trembled more when he said that Tiny Tim was growing strong and hearty. His active little crutch was heard upon the floor, and back came Tiny Tim before another word was spoken, escorted by his brother and sister to his stool before the fire. And while Bob, turning up his cuffs, as if, poor fellow, they were capable of being made more shabby, compounded some hot mixture in a jug with gin and lemons and stirred it round and round and put it on the hob to simmer. Master Peter and the two ubiquitous young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they had soon returned in high procession. Such bustle ensued that you might have thought a goose was the rarest of all birds, a feathered phenomenon to which a black swan was a matter of course, and in truth it was something very like that in the house. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy, ready beforehand in a little saucepan, hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody, not forgetting themselves, and mounting guard upon their posts, crammed spoons into their mouths, lest they should shriek for goose before their turn came to be helped. At last the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause, as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it into the breast. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight arose all around the board, and even Tiny Tim, excited by the two young Cratchits, beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried, "Hurrah!" All right, let's leave it at the Cratchits' Christmas Day feast to pick up tomorrow. We are 56% of the way through, and there is a week and a bit, 9 days until Christmas. Holy cow. Oh no, 9 days till Christmas Eve. I can't do math. It's a learning disability. It's a real thing. Anyway, tomorrow, Cratchit Christmas dinner continues, and I'd like to sincerely apologize for my kid voices. They were grating to me to say out loud, and I'm sure they were equally, if not more, grating to listen to. Hopefully there won't be too many more child roles in this book, but we know there's a pretty classic line from Tiny Tim coming up soon. Anyway, my dear friends and loved ones, thank you for listening to this extra long weekend episode. Thank you for letting me into your ear holes, and I love you all so much. Take good care of your hearts, and talk to you tomorrow for Cratchit Christmas Dinner Part 2. Bye!